ADP uses data-driven insights to design HR solutions to help businesses of all sizes think beyond today so they can find more success tomorrow. ADP, always designing for HR, talent, time, payroll, people.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, April 18th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. Technology is essential for modern warfare. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has made that clearer than ever. Modern armies and citizens fighting for their survival are relying on tech, whether it's being used as a tool for communication or as a weapon, controlling drones or conducting cyber attacks. We've covered a number of those issues on this show, and recently we opened up the lines for your questions. On today's episode, our tech reporter Sam Schechner will be here to answer them. That's after these headlines. Tesla is hoping to restart production at its Shanghai plant this week, according to people familiar with the matter. The EV maker halted manufacturing at the factory in late March due to a citywide lockdown to stop the spread of COVID-19. The company plans to resume operations incrementally, but sources say the plan could still change if cases rise again and the city tightens controls. The battle between Twitter and Elon Musk has escalated. On Friday, the company adopted a so-called poison pill, a legal maneuver that makes it harder for a shareholder to buy a large stake in a company. In this case, if Musk, who owns just over 9% of Twitter, or any other shareholder, buys 15% of the company, all other shareholders will have the right to buy additional stock for half price. Twitter's decision came a day after Musk's unsolicited offer to buy the company outright for $43 billion. And in the wake of last week's mass shooting in the New York subway, the city is considering installing weapon detection technology across its transit system. One such technology from a company called Evolve is already being used in places like stadiums and theaters, including New York City's Lincoln Center. The way it works is that people walk through a tower-like structure, and sensors and artificial intelligence identify whether or not they're carrying a weapon. That information is then sent to a screen monitored by a security officer. Our reporter James Finelli says installing a system like that in the New York subway won't be easy.
New York City's subway system is huge. It's over 400 stations, and it's sprawling and goes through all five boroughs. And one of the problems is just the sheer challenge of installing those in all the stations and whether or not they even have the manpower to like monitor people going through them. The other challenge is some civil liberties groups have pointed out that, for instance, this Evolve technology, there's been independent studies done that showed that sometimes they get a false positive on a weapon. And in fact, it's like an eyeglass case and not a gun that the sensors are detecting. Evolve technology says that happens very rarely, but you know, the concern for civil liberties groups is that it will lead to people being stopped by police and frisked for no reason at all.
All right, coming up, we answer your questions about how tech is being used in the war in Ukraine. That's after the break.
Business today looks nothing like it did yesterday. While it's more unpredictable, its possibilities are endless. Knowing how to turn unpredictability into an advantage is where ADP comes in. ADP uses data-driven insights to design HR solutions and help businesses of all sizes work better, smarter, so they can think beyond today and find even more success tomorrow. ADP. Always designing for HR, talent, time, payroll, people.
Since the start of the war in Ukraine, we've been keeping you up to date on the many ways tech is playing a role in the conflict, from the war's impact on Ukraine's large IT sector to how social media companies are reacting, and of course how cyber attacks are being used by both sides. But there's a lot more to dig into, so we asked listeners to send us their questions about the role of tech in the war. Thank you to everyone who called in. We won't be able to get to all your questions, but to answer what we can, we have with us WSJ tech reporter Sam Schechner. Hi, Sam. Thanks for joining us.
A pleasure to be here.
So let's dive right in. Our first question is about something that's been a major topic of discussion in recent days, alleged war crimes in Ukraine.
Hi, my name is Ren Egawa, and I would like to know how tech companies in and outside Ukraine are helping each other to collect and synthesize critical information, such as locations, dates and times, video data, image data, and so on, to build strong cases to indict and try these Russians as war criminals.
So, Sam, you know, after what's happened in Bucha, I think a lot of people have been wondering about this. Russia has denied involvement in any war crimes, but maybe we can broaden this out. I mean, what kind of tech can be used to help collect data for possible war crimes cases?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And it's, you know, in a way, it's not a new one. I mean, we're talking about new technologies, but technology is sort of been something that's been used to advance human rights and to record, you know, alleged crimes sort of as it's been as it's been invented. I mean, think about photography as evidence, and then video. And now people around the world have these tools in their hands, and you're seeing the results. This isn't the first armed conflict or war where, you know, alleged war crimes have been documented. But to have it at this scale and broadcast almost in real time is a new thing. You know, how are folks working together? I mean, you have some groups, some media outlets, for instance, you know, assembling social media posts and trying to geolocate, for instance, where there have been cluster bomb attacks. There's an online investigative site called Bellingcat that's been doing that using open source tools. And, you know, the other way this is having an impact is that it's bringing awareness to where and how certain alleged crimes, such as those in Bucha, may have occurred. There's also satellite companies that are, you know, saying that they're pushing aside clients, whether they be private or government, to work with Ukraine and others to document potential war crimes. So there's a lot being done. That being said, technology is a neutral tool, and it's also being used to muddy the waters. Social media can be used to spread false information or doctored images about things that have happened.
That's a really interesting point, and I think it leads us nicely into our next question about the kinds of tech that are being used in the war.
Hi, Matt Garrig, and my question centers around some of the commonplace technology that's over-the-counter that is being used for warfare.
So I guess the question here is, what role is consumer technology, you know, the kind we use every day, playing in the fighting?
Well, that's also a really good question, and I guess another one that kind of highlights how this is really a 21st century war. Something that strikes me now just hearing this question is images of people trying to get into electronic stores in Ukraine and Russian troops trying to get in, probably in search of cell phones after the invasion. You know, because tools like that are important for navigating yourself, for, you know, staying in touch with family. And when it comes to other consumer technology, I mean, drones come to mind. You can use, and it seems that in this war, people have used consumer drones to, say, spot enemy positions or to take videos of things that might have happened during a particular encounter.
All right, so this next question is something a few people have asked about.
Morning, Zoe. Jim DeSouci. Curious how they're keeping their internet up while they're having all this warfare, especially in the East. Are they sharing, like creating peer-to-peer networks? Ukraine has been known to do some pretty fabulous coding. So how are they playing the cat-and-mouse game of knocking down their internet access and propping it back up again between the two sides?
I mean, internet's so crucial for communication with each other, with the rest of the world. So what are they doing?
Interestingly, it seems like most of the internet connectivity that is available in Ukraine is from standard internet service providers. In the last 30 days, you know, there have been times when the internet has partially gone down in the country, that cat and mouse game like you're talking about, but it's never been fully off across the country. And that's in part because Ukraine's internet connection comes from the West, from Europe. And the ISPs have been adept at reconnecting customers who have been cut off. You know, there's ways the internet can be cut off because the cable's been cut and some tech actually has to go out and reconnect it. And then there also are cyber attacks. You know, an early part of the war, there was an attack on a satellite internet provider that rendered thousands of modems in Ukraine unusable. You know, at the end of March, the country's largest landline provider, and which also provides, you know, connectivity to the military, was mostly knocked offline from a cyber attack. But, you know, those things last a few hours, and so far they've been able to put them back. Somewhat famously, Elon Musk provided terminals to Ukraine to connect to SpaceX's Starlink satellite internet service. You know, that seems like it could be a useful backup should it become necessary. As we can see, so far the main ISPs have mostly managed to shoulder the burden.
All right, our next question is somewhat linked. It's about something that's underlying a lot of the technology questions we've been discussing.
Hello, my name is Cindy Woodleaf. I am interested to know why Russia has not turned off the electricity supply to Ukraine. So much of their ability to function and communicate has to do with their tech infrastructure, which is supplied by electricity, and Russia is their major electricity supplier.
Sam, I think this is important because Ukraine did say the other day that one of its electric grids was targeted by a cyber attack. Do we know if critical infrastructure like electricity has been, you know, a big target for Russian hackers?
It seems like it may be becoming more of a target, that's for sure, especially as Russia is focusing its military attack on the eastern part of the country. In the past, we know Russia has managed to cause blackouts in Ukraine via cyber attacks. So that is a danger, although Ukraine's cyber defense officials say that they've hardened their defenses since then, and they don't think that would be possible. But, you know, that is a danger going forward. Our reporting suggests that Russia thought it would triumph quickly when the war started. So, you know, that might explain why there wasn't an effort to cut off electricity at the beginning of the war. The invaders might have wanted to use that electricity shortly after they arrived. But, you know, Ukraine also has significant domestic power generation. I mean, we've heard about the dangers around potential damage to their nuclear power plants, but in other words, that means they have functioning nuclear power plants that generate electricity. And Ukraine has been in a process of unplugging itself from the Russian power grid and actually is now on the European electricity grid. So from that point of view, they have electricity. The question is, obviously, if you bomb a power station or bomb supply lines, the electricity can go down. And there have been blackouts at times in parts of the country.
All right. That's our reporter, Sam Schechner. Sam, thanks so much for joining us to answer these questions.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been really interesting answering all these questions. I always love hearing from our readers.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.